My job is I just want you to think. And that includes the policymakers and the stakeholders and the community. So with the conversation we have today with Mr. Blank and with Mr. Cathy, my goal is not to make them sound wonderful, not to make them sound terrible. I know, I think Mr. Blank and Mr. Cathy were a little nervous, but I'm easy, right? I'm fair but feisty. Because it's important, I think, for the stakeholders to be transparent and authentic with the community. That's what you all expect of me as a journalist, right? And now more than ever, being authentic and being transparent is so important in the current climate that we live in, right? So with that said, if you want me to read a 4-page bio on Mr. Blank and Mr. Cathy, raise your hand. If not, Mr. Blank does. See? Now, that first question might be what happened to the Falcons, but I'm not going to do it. By the way, that question came from the Honorable Justice Lee Ward Sears. She told me to tell you that. But no, we all know Mr. Blank and the importance of his whole family of businesses and what he's meant to Atlanta. And let's be clear, rescuing the Falcons and doing something more with the Falcons than any other of the former previous ownership did. So that's really important. I want to be clear about that. The Cathys and Chick-fil-A, we know. First of all, the lemonade. I don't know what y'all put in that lemonade, Mr. Cathy, but for me, what stands out to me, particularly with Chick-fil-A, is the commitment they have to young people, and particularly young people of color who are hired to work in their restaurants, and then who also have an opportunity to receive scholarships and help. And that's important to me as a woman of color, as a woman of color who was raised in a foster home in St. Louis with loving parents. And they made sure I went to college, so that's important to me. And Wanya Lucas, my CEO, can tell you I get asked to do a lot of things, but I am only committed to being part of organizations, and it's not being an advocate, it's being part of organizations that are giving back, and I'm gonna be clear about this, to people who look like me, people who sound like me, and people who want to be like me, or Candace, or Wanya. So that's important. So with that being said, I'm going to bring up Arthur Blank and Dan Cathy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Can you sit right there, yeah. You two know each other?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Allow me, I saw Mr. Roberto Gonzalez with Coca-Cola. He always prominently displayed a product placement, 8.5 serving of Coca-Cola at every lectern he spoke at. So I thought that was, I can learn.
You should have brought a Falcons helmet.
Yeah.
I've got my family here. My wife's here, Angie, and
hey, Angie.
Privilege, and president of our foundation, Penny McPhee, and Frank Fernandez, who's probably said hello to every single person who lives in these zip codes. He's here as senior vice president of our family foundation as well. So thank them for being here today.
Rose, can I
And what happened to the Falcons was that we had an unbelievably great year. We did. We had a wonderful year. You can't win them all. We want to win them all, and we got to win the last game of the year, and we're committed to doing that, and our coaches are, and so is Matt, and so is Julio, and so are all of us. So, but it was a wonderful year for our franchise and for our team, and we look forward to getting back to Super Bowl.
And you will.
We will, and playing it sooner than we're hosting it in 2019.
Absolutely.
Good. Arthur, I wanted to present something to you if I could. I thought to myself, if I could bring a little gift for Arthur Blank.
It's a sandwich.
What do you give Arthur Blank, you know?
It's a sandwich.
So I wanted to give you a portion of honey, and this comes from our farm, and the name of it is Beshert Farm and Gardens. That was a Yiddish term used in a
you know what
interview
it means?
In God's destiny or God's...
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, very good.
And so
that's brotherhood right there.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I was in a Guidepost magazine with Bernie Marcus talking about moving from Handy Dan and coming to Atlanta. Yeah. And so you'll enjoy that.
I will.
Every teaspoon of that, it took six bees an entire lifetime to make every teaspoon.
Wow.
You'll enjoy it. But also...
What happens to the bees, Dan?
Is this from your farm?
That's from my farm. Yes, sir.
Dan, well, hold up. It took how many bees?
Six bees an entire lifetime to make one teaspoon of honey.
Well, where are they now?
So savor. Well, they're in Bee Never Never Land right now because this is from last fall. But also... we've enjoyed a bumper crop of strawberries this year.
All right.
And I personally picked every one of these last night, and you can put those on your cereal. So,
okay.
Miss Andrew, we have tech fixes.
Okay, well,
I'll put it back in.
I'm going to leave here late and go have breakfast again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank
honey
you.
On toast and all strawberries. Right. Picked by Dan Cathy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's great.
Yes, sir.
All right.
If you haven't tried the lemonade, it's wonderful. All the food is wonderful.
It is. That's true. So. Gentlemen, as we get started, and when it comes to an issue like revitalizing a community, and we all know the historical importance of the West Side. I don't think I have to tell anybody in here the historical importance, the critical historical importance of the West Side. So you all know that. We all know that. And there are typically buzzwords that people throw out there. Maybe buzzwords folks don't like. Capitalism, gentrification. But what I've also discovered is that very seldom there's another phrasing that's rarely used, and that's finding a successful model that works. Someone says, well, you know what, Rose? Why is transforming the West Side so important to two influential, very wealthy, prominent businessmen like Arthur Blank and Dan Cathy? So Arthur Blank, we'll start with you. Why is it so important for you?
Well, I think, I don't know, I don't know that the West Side per se is, I mean, it's not, my life's work is not about the West Side. It's about giving back to others. It's about making a difference in people's lives. We do it through all of our for-profit businesses, as Dan does through Chick-fil-A. We do it through our family foundation, certainly. And we look for opportunities that we can either make a difference ourselves or make a difference in collaboration with others. Our vision for building the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, we had a lot of opportunities to put it in a variety of places in the greater Atlanta area. We chose downtown Atlanta by design, even though the cost to build a stadium on that piece of property was going to be significantly higher than it would be someplace else. Because we want it to be part of the revitalization and the great connection that takes place downtown Atlanta today, the growth of downtown, the National Human Rights Civil World of Coke, just Children's Museum. My partner built the largest aquarium in the country there. So there's a variety of wonderful things taking place downtown. We viewed the stadium as an opportunity to bring what we think, and most people think, is going to be the finest sports entertainment complex in the country to Atlanta, but beyond that, act as a catalyst, one of the catalysts amongst many for the revitalization of the West Side, an area that, when I moved here, or earlier when I moved here, had a population of 60 to 70,000 folks, is down to as low as 10% of that. Atlanta, when I moved here, had less than 1 million people living in it, in greater Atlanta area. Today it's close to 7 million. So. That area particularly has not flourished and grown the way the rest of Atlanta has for a lot of reasons. So we are committed, along with many nonprofit, for-profit, local residents, partners, listening and trying to respond to what people are telling us are the issues, and doing it most importantly in partnership and in collaboration with a lot of others who have the same like-minded heart. So we care deeply about Atlanta, we keep deeply about the West Side, we keep deeply about the history of the West Side, what it stands for Atlanta, our city, our region, but beyond that, really for our nation and really the world in many ways. So that's the emphasis for our commitment.
Dan, you heard Arthur talk about the history, the importance of it, talked about how it's changed in terms of population. You of all people, especially with your father, you know the importance of a community being able to remain a community, even as economic development comes around it. So how do you see your role and the role of your businesses in transforming the West Side?
Well, we've certainly seen God's blessings on our business. This is a business that my father started back in 1946, a tiny little restaurant that continued to grow. And with success comes a deep sense of responsibility. It's a responsibility to reinvest back in the lives of others. And I've certainly been inspired by many over the many years here in Atlanta, having been a native of Atlanta. Most recently, probably Tom Cousins and the wonderful work that's taking place over at Eastside to realize that the professional skills that God has given us to build a successful business of planning and organizing and having vision and monitoring financials and oh no, those are the same kind of skills that it takes to also be able to reinvest back into community. To see how Tom Cousins was able to leverage that, he was recently honored there at Eastlake, and to see how successful that it can be a model that we can learn from. And so we've recently been to Cincinnati, other places. Just Monday night I was in New York City, went to an event where they raised $54 million. It was called the Robin Hood event. I first saw it on 60 Minutes about a year ago. And so we made it a commitment to get up there as quick as we could. What can we learn? So I'm on an investigative expedition all across the country to see what are the successful models out there that we can bring that kind of thinking back into Atlanta, especially for the West Side.
You know, Mr. Blank.
The other thing I would say, it's a little bit different than the corporate world. The corporate world, the for-profit world, tends to manage whether they're public companies or even private companies, tend to look at things more on a quarter-to-quarter, year-to-year basis. A lot of the issues, the social issues that we deal with through our family foundation, and a lot of the issues that have put stress on the West Side and have been passed on from one generation to another, take a long-term commitment. So in the case of our family foundation, in the case of my family, my wife, my children, et cetera, we're committed to 20, 30 years of whatever it's going to take to see those differences through. I think the culture of our organization, the culture of our family really requires that. You know, the same situation. I knew Dan's father well. Very funny story. One time I was honored, and Truett was going to present me with the award, and he came up to me before and he said to me, "Well, what should I say?" And I said, "Well, Truett, I'm not going to tell you what to say." He said, "Well, I'll say whatever you want me to say about you." So, you know, Truett's just a wonderful man. But the point is that culture started with his father, continued on with Dan and his family now, and is part of their organization, is part of their spirit, their heart and their soul. And that will carry forward, because many of these issues are ones that you have to be willing to stay with for a period of time. It's one of the issues in the past. You have people that have been well-meaning, well-intended, have been in and out. The in and out doesn't work when you're dealing with problems that are passed on from one generation to the next.
Dan, Cathy, you mentioned Eastlake, which the core of that community, the golf course was there. Whereas with the West Side, you're building a billion-dollar stadium. So if your foundations are going to be leading the way on that, what primary role will they have? Is it just about throwing money? And I may be asking questions that people in the audience already know, but there may be some that don't.
No.
Is it just throwing money at the problem? Are you also seeking input from the community? Are you also making sure that the community has a seat at the table? We use that term a lot. Everybody has a seat at the table. But before you get to the table, you got to get to the building, and then you got to get inside the building. And that hasn't always happened for a specific population. So how are your foundations making sure that at that table, these people are sitting there?
So in the case of, back and look at my history, in the case of company I co-founded here in Atlanta, the Home Depot. I was at their shareholders meeting yesterday, and the CEO put up a chart which reflects the culture of the company. It's the same culture we have in place today in all of our businesses. But the point I'm going to make is that it starts with an inverted triangle, and the inverted triangle is powerful at HD, and it's powerful in all of our businesses today, that the customers start first and the CEO is at the bottom. So the Atlanta Falcons, that's true with today, with our soccer team, our PGA business, our family foundation, our grantees, our guest ranch in Montana, et cetera. We're mostly concerned about the people that we serve, the guests, the fans, the customers, whatever it may be. And in our grantee work, we don't get confused about who we're here to serve. We're not here to serve the people that are granting the funds. We're here to serve the ultimate customers. Mm-hmm. So we pride ourselves on being great listeners and responders and unfiltering the information that we're getting back. So we spend a lot of time in our for-profit businesses and our nonprofit businesses in the communities and listening and responding to what people are telling that they're needing. There's no point in coming up with a cure for which there's no known disease. So we care deeply about what everybody in the community has to say, because that's ultimately where you're going to find out the truths about what's working, what's not working, what's needed. It's not your perception. My view of what the community needs, frankly, is not important. Dan's view of what the community needs is really not important. I don't mean it's unimportant, but on a relative basis, not important. It's the people that are living in the community, people who are in touch with the families, who understand the importance of public education and safety and jobs and job training and all of those things that are critical to all of us as human beings. They understand where they stand on that fulcrum of success or failure, and they understand their highest priorities. So our job is to be really good listeners, to be really good responders, and to make sure that we do it not singularly, whether it be our family of businesses or Dan's company, but we do it in collaboration and partnership with everybody who has an interest. This is not about putting a brand on it. It's about putting a support system in place and making sure the people who are living here are at the very top of the scale, and we're at the bottom, supplying the resources, being good listeners, giving them guidance where necessary to make sure that we get 2 and 2 to equal 6 or 8 or 10, and that we and that we're good in that regard.
Rose, my response would be that part of the mission that we have here is not just rebuilding parks and safe communities, affordable housing, businesses, retail, but it's also to lift the esteem of people that live in this area, to lift their own sense of self-dignity, their sense of self-determinism, their sense of ownership for this community. And the worst thing we could do is to offset that anyway. I'm delighted that we have D. Ruth Dadani here, who has spent untold hours with some of the most gifted urbanist planners from around the country that we've been bringing in over the last year and a half, with not only digesting some of the great ideas that have gone on in this community for years now and trying to get the best of the best, but by sitting down with the individuals, listening sessions. He's doing that actually even this week, so that there's engagement and involvement, a sense of ownership for what's taking place. So any resources that we can bring, whether it's a world-recognized expert like Diru, others, that's what we want to do, so that the people can be able to determine for themselves, you know, how can we lift ourselves out of this situation?
The challenges of the West Side are not unique. You can go to any city, major city. I'm from St. Louis, so I see it there. You have areas where there's high concentration of poverty, high concentration of unemployment, crime rate. You have schools that need help. I don't believe in the term of failing schools. I try my best to even stay away from using that because I don't believe... Oh, sorry. You don't fail children. You need to support children. Systems fail children. That's just my opinion. Y'all can tweet that if you want. So there are the challenges to the West Side are not unique. But what challenges do you all see that are still out there in terms of as you go through this whole process? We're looking down the road to 20 and 30 years. But what challenges, what are the biggest challenges you all see to transforming the West Side?
In a conversation that I had with former Mayor Shirley Franklin and the work that she's doing with Tom Cousins and purpose-built communities, a question I asked her, I said, and they're now operating in 15, 17 different cities across the country. I asked her the question, what's the scarce resource that you see out there? She said, it's not money, it's not a desire, it's leadership. And so this leadership is going to have to come from a whole array of different sources. We've got leadership with elected officials. We've got leadership among homeowner associations. We've got leadership in churches and places of worship that are here. We have leadership in other social organizations that are here. And we the more we can organize that leadership, the more we can have a common vision for what the citizens of this community want. If we can help facilitate that coming together, this gathering that we have right here, you know, this has been for, in October, it'll be 2 years that we've been meeting like this. Now, the room's not always this full, but it is comfortably full. There's very few of those Chick-fil-A chicken and biscuits left over. I know that. But what we've built over the years, over these 2 years now, is we're building trust. And Liz Blake, that's right over here, the wife of Frank Blake, former CEO of Home Depot, she said, why don't we pass the microphone around so everybody can introduce themselves? And Miss Liz, I have to confess to you, I kind of thought we were wasting time because we had so many people in the room to take the microphone there. It took a long time. I mean, it might be 30 minutes just introducing. But what came out of that, though, was an understanding of the rich range of people and talents that was represented in this room, from tenants and landlords and business people, elected officials, and on and on and on. And what happens after the meeting is promptly adjourned at 9 o'clock is the unofficial agenda is just getting started. And that's all these people that are trading business cards back and forth, and they're lingering here for maybe another hour to be followed up by other meetings that take place where we're building trust and confidence, and we're building a lot of resolve as well, that we do not face an insurmountable challenge. We can do this. It's going to take a long time. And I think that's where, as Arthur mentioned, you know, we're not an elected official here that has a short cycle time. You know, we're in this for the long haul. I mean, really long. It's a generational issue. It took generations to get us to this situation, and it's going to take a long time to rebuild it. But I'm impatient myself, and I want it to happen for as many people as quickly as possible.
The other thing I would say, Rose, is that you know, this is not a swing for the fences, or it's not play back on football for everything. It's not going to be Matt Ryan dropping back and throwing a 90-yard touchdown pass. It's going to be getting first downs 10 yards at a time. So if you look at the crime rate, for instance, in this area, these two zip codes together, Vine City and English Avenue, in that area, the crime rate is down about 30-35% year over year. Part of that is a lot of reasons for it, but one of the reasons the city has placed 35 surveillance cameras in those areas. We have 5 police families living in those areas. We have the Atlanta Police Foundation very active in those areas. So we're making changes in that regard, and you're seeing that. Our West Side Funds program has trained over 500 folks living in these areas. 420 of them have permanent jobs. They've brought back $11 million in living wages back to these communities. 76% of them are still retained after a year. National averages are less than 50%. So, you know, whether it be jobs or security or public education or whatever, you know, in order to stop a tide, you have to begin to stop it. You can't just reverse it automatically. And so I think we're in the stopping business and starting to reverse it in a lot of these areas. We're seeing different trends develop now, and we have to keep that momentum up. And I think, you know, what you'll hear from Dan and myself is that this is going to take time. It's going to take a lot of people having their shoulder to the wheel. It's going to take continue to be very good listeners and have the humility, the culture of humility, the corporate humility, the institutional humility, to understand that the folks who are living here at the end of the day are going to know best what their needs are. And we can give them opinions, we can give them some guidance, we can share thoughts with them, we can bring people in from the outside who had similar experiences. But at the end of the day, they should be setting the priorities in terms of what the needs are. And we should help quarterback and collaborate and make sure resources are used in a purposeful way, in a planned way, so we end up with the end result we want, that they want.
That's a great segue into my next question, because Dan, Cathy talked about leadership. You talked about it will take time, step by step. And then you just finished saying that the community also has to have a hand in all of this. So far in this process, how have you all viewed the community's responsibility and their involvement in this whole revitalization process?
Well, let me go back to our stadium, if I can, for a moment. Penny McPhee was sitting here in the first row, spent probably the better part of two and a half, maybe 3 years before we broke ground in our stadium, meeting with people in the communities and finding out not what they needed on the inside of the stadium, but what we needed on the outside of the stadium. So thinking about in advance and developing along with, you know, a variety of people who serve on the Westside Future Fund board, what the Westside Future Fund would look like, what kind of partnerships would require, who should serve on the board, what the mix would be, spending time with the mayor and his staff, et cetera, to do that. So a lot of that work was reflected really in early digging and understanding about really what these issues are. And we hired Frank Fernandez, a senior vice president for our family foundation, but a great experience in Austin, Texas, great success there. Not perfect, but it's not perfect, as you said, in any urban city in the country today. But Frank has had incredible success. And we brought him in way earlier than starting construction on the stadium so he could understand these issues and really be a good listener. Another good example of that is that where the Georgia Dome sits today, the company that Frank was CEO of, the Home Depot, is now going to take that property along with us and turn it into what's called the Home Depot backyard. That's 13.2 acres. That'll be, and I'm leaving here going later this morning to the Cook Park groundbreaking, but that'll be a connected park for folks living in the West Side. It'll be used for tailgating 50 days a year for big events in the stadium. The other 315 days a year, it's going to be used for community gathering, for theater and arts and food and culture and youth sports and a variety of activities that the community will dictate to us. We've hired folks to activate that to make sure it's done in a quality way. But we believe bringing people together in community and having them touch each other as human beings in a variety of ways is the way that we can help bring folks together through these generational issues that they're struggling with.
Rose, I think this room is evidence of the response of the community to all the many different efforts that are being made. I think people are encouraged today as maybe never before. I think we've got a convergence of some unique dynamics that are going on that we didn't even have 5 or 10 years ago. But when you see the overall growth of Atlanta and the economy getting stronger, you'll see a major migration of people from the suburbs wanting to move into the downtown areas. Right. You see Paul White that's here and the Beltline, which is a magnificent catalyst for all kind of residential and retail development that's going on and all the different appendages that go out from there. Obviously, the investment that Arthur and the others that are making in the stadium that's there. We got the wind at our back, you know, more so now than ever before. And I think that people see that they see it and it's for real. I don't know if Mother Moore is here. Mother Moore, are you here someplace? She's usually here, but she's a real encouragement to me. She's been a lifelong resident here in this area. She's always very outspoken. She speaks her mind and she's always got something to say.
And she should.
And she should. And yeah. So I really appreciate this level of engagement and the dynamic that we see going on here. It's always done with a lot of civility and respectfulness of one another with a real ear to listening. And so we're already seeing a lot of very wonderful constructive things that have already happened.
As we near the end of this conversation and the last couple of questions are something we journalists like, which are those hypothetical questions. And let's say another developer wants to come in. You know what happens when development comes in, and we've been talking about affordable housing on WABE, and you mentioned the longtime resident there. We have been on the West Side. We've toured the West Side Works with Frank. We talked to people in the community. We just stopped people on the street and said, hey, what concerns you? And it was affordable housing. And they looked at us and they said, you know, I've been here for 20 years. I want to stay here. So what influence can you all have if a new developer comes in and is not really interested in affordable housing? You can't tell people how to conduct business. But what influence can you all have in making sure that those new developments that come into the West Side, that want to be part of the culture, that they understand the importance of making sure there is enough for everybody, that everybody gets a piece of the pie?
Well, I think we'd all be embarrassed if we came back here 20 years from now and the Mother Moores and the other grandmothers, parents, children are no longer able to afford to live in this area. I think it would be shameful. It would be an embarrassment for all of us. We would lose that sense of community and heritage that people would want to have. But the more we can lead those efforts, the more we can manage those safeguards. Again, we were just up in Cincinnati to see when Cincinnati and in New York, what can be done to put in some safeguards to prevent that from happening. John Almond, that's here, who leads the Westside Future Fund, is particularly sensitive to that. It would be a train wreck if we lost the culture and the heritage of the people that are here as other developers come in and take up large sections of this land. So we've got some plans in place to be able to prevent that from happening. I'm amazed to see the kind of corporate support to be able to help in that way, so that as more and more attention comes in, as land prices and values begin to escalate, that we'll have the safeguards in place so we won't lose the heritage of the people who've been longtime residents here in Westside.
And when you say that, what comes to mind for me is Harlem, New York, which looks nothing like Harlem from, 20, 30 years ago, Arthur.
Well, I guess I completely agree with Dan. I think you have to look at the very specific things. You look at the mayor's passing of the anti-displacement tax. That's something real to help keep people in their homes. You look at the Westside Collaboration, which has to do with renters and homeowners and small business owners that are living in these areas now, and how do we keep them in these areas now. I think we have to continue to elect officials that care about diversity, that care about history, that care about inclusion, that care about keeping people intact and bringing people together, that understand the greatness of America, the greatness of our cities is our diversity. And that's the fabric that's woven together. It's not woven separately, it's woven together. And so I think that that would be my solution, is that we have to continue to provide leadership that says, that kind of inclusiveness is more powerful, stronger going forward than something that's kind of a singular nature. And we have to have elected officials like, Mr. Young sitting here today, Ivory Young, and the mayor later this morning, and mayors like Shirley Franklin who believed in that and reinforced that. As we, as the world is becoming smaller, being connected to others of all genders, backgrounds, faiths, diversities, et cetera, is becoming even more critical today. And so I think the more people live together, and that's why this Cook Park is so important, that's why HD Backyard is so important, that's why the activation of all of these areas is important. All those things are very, very critical. And I think that, as Dan mentioned earlier, helping people, whether it be through jobs or a program like American Explorers, which deals with high school kids, learning about self-esteem over a period of time and teaching them how to be leaders with themselves and their families, all of those things are critical in helping raise a community and raise a group of people that want, walking with their chest out and their shoulders back, feeling good about themselves, feeling empowered, and taking control over these situations, have voices that are at the top of the triangle, not at the bottom of the triangle, where they're being listened to, for the right reasons, and we're paying the most attention to them.
Do either of you worry about or concern yourself with the legacy of what your businesses will be tied to the West Side? Do you think about that? Do you worry about it at all?
Well, those that look back on my life would attribute the West Side and the efforts that we're having here back to my life. I'd be very proud of that. On my dad's tombstone is a scripture verse, Proverbs 22:1, and it says, "A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches." And so when we invest our life in things that last beyond our lifetime, it leads to a very meaningful life, a life that has a life of purpose, a life of significance, and that will always be in being able to be humanitarians in our own way, to be able to lift the hopes of people, to inspire them to be the best God-given individual that they can be. Very excited about the opportunity we have for young people that are coming up. And this summer, we have a number of summer programs right here in the West Side. Our Rodney Bullard and some of our folks from our Chick-fil-A Foundation, our Windshape Foundation are all converging together. We'll be doing a lot with marriage and marriage enrichment. I have my brother Bubba here that coordinates that. So we're trying to bring as many resources together so that legacy will be one that we can be proud of. We have a history in Atlanta of really incredible leaders that have served this city so very well, going back from Ivan Allen and my generation, certainly Andrew Young and other private sector individuals with Roberto Goizueta, Robert W. Woodruff, and on and on and on. And their legacy is seen all over the Atlanta area. I hope our legacy together for all of us in this room is that we pull together to do something that individual would never be able to do. And we'll look forward, we'll look back on it as we see little children who are getting a good education, you know, who fall in love with their mates for life, who raise responsible citizens, who get great education, who can live and work in harmony and peace, and it's all we can all grow together. That would be a great legacy for any of us.
Mr. Blank?
My wife and I visited my mother's gravesite on Sunday, and her tombstone says love and compassion for a family and for those in need. And she lived her entire life that way. And so this is not about my legacy, my family's legacy, our foundation's legacy, or the new stadium. It's about the legacy of the people that are living in these communities, their born children, their unborn children. It's about what they do with their lives to maximize their experience while they're here on Earth, to make life better for themselves, make life better for others. So, you know, I am not worried about our success. I'm worried about their success. If we're successful working with everybody in support of their aspirations and their dreams and their wishes for themselves and everybody that's loved in their circle, we will have a great legacy. But it's not about, you know, what our legacy would be. It would be about what their legacy would be. And looking back and saying we had great support along the way, Chick-fil-A, you know, our organization, companies like Home Depot, IBM, Mercedes-Benz, Novellus. I mean, it's a long list of our founding partners that are connected to the West Side in a variety of ways and connected to the West Side Future Fund and a lot of other efforts that are taking place in these communities.
All right, as we wrap up, we've got our crystal ball here. Y'all can see it. And 20, 30 years from now, the Falcons have two or three championships. Atlanta United's got two or three.
Amen.
And but what does the West Side look like? What should it look like 20, 30 years from now?
Well, I think it looks like my aspiration would be, you know, you'd be back in the population waves, the 60, 70,000 or more than that. It'd be a very diverse community. It would represent and honor its history and its past and its heritage. It would have a community that would honor where it is at that point in their lives and be thinking about its own future, you know, how to make life better for people living in that community and have a broader view on how to make life better for those that we live with in Atlanta and really around the world. So it would be a leading community. It would be a good role model for probably some other urban center elsewhere in the country or the world that needs a role model on how to move from A through Z and do it fairly quickly and efficiently and do it with good collaboration and making sure that we continue to listen and respond to the people that we're trying to serve.
Rose, I think that we'd all be very proud if the West Side of Atlanta 20, 30 years from now has a reputation of being a very safe community, that it's a community that has a lot of wholesomeness to it, that there's a vibrancy in terms of young moms and dads strolling, you know, babies, you know, down the deal and dogs barking and schools that are vivacious and band programs and arts programs, that there's grocery stores conveniently all over West Side where you can get, you know, delicious, wholesome, nutritious vegetables and fruits and so forth that's there. I think it's the, you know, kind of picture that we'd, you know, that this is a viable place that is a rich part of Atlanta. I hope it also, I think there's a potential for the West Side to take on a unique identity that maybe is yet to be discovered at this point. It could be in the sports area with all the things that we've got going here where we begin to think about sports and sports incubator technologies, employment continue to grow. A lot of interest in that. It could be a known as a media center for Atlanta with the tremendous growth in what's going on with the film and motion picture industry. It could have a unique identity relative to that. But I think there will be a unique identity as we would have maybe in other areas of Atlanta that are kind of known for. We'll be searching to find out what that is. But it'll be something that all of Atlanta can be proud of.
So it goes back to that phrasing I was talking about earlier, a successful model that works. All right.
And I want to, because I'm not here every 2 weeks, and I know Dan is, I just want to take a minute and thank particularly all the residents from the community for being here, believing in yourselves, believing in collaboration, believing in speaking out, telling us what we need to hear. Understand that we're here to really be really good listeners to all of you and to respond to all of you in a thoughtful way. Make sure we weave a solution in a collaborative way that's going to equal success for you and for your families that are here today and in the future. It takes an effort to be involved in the community. And people often ask me, where did I get my notion of being a brother's keeper from? It really came from my mother. I came from a very middle-class background. I lived in an apartment until I was 31 years old. I shared a single-bedroom home with my mother and father. Dad passed away when I was 15, but I had a brother, so it was just a single-bedroom home. We had no money to speak of. My mother was always involved in the community, just like a lot of you all are today. She was at every community meeting she could be at, spoke out on every issue that she knew something about and some that she didn't. She was a very, Penny's laughing because she knew my mother. And my wife knew my mother, obviously. She just passed away a few years ago, a couple of months short of 100. But, you know, I want to thank you for your involvement, because it's easy for you to kind of sit back and you know, let this happen to you versus you taking control over it and you making sure that you're the ones that are leading. It takes time and effort and principle and speaking up and speaking out. So I want to thank you for doing that and giving us your best ideas. I promise you that we're all very good listeners, and I promise you we'll continue to come up with solutions that reflect not only our best thinking, but more importantly, what your needs are and your very best thinking. So thank you very much for that.
I don't want to miss this opportunity to acknowledge Arthur Blank and his leadership and the role that he has here in Atlanta, and to thank him for being such a mentor for me. To see he and Bernie Marcus running around in orange aprons, I would love to slip around and see if I could see some of their Saturday morning meetings in the parking lot that were televised. I camp out at Chick-fil-A restaurant grand openings, as I will be in November when we open up, by the way, in front of the Walmart here on Martin Luther King. Come join us for that camp out. But I have that tent. I carry it around across the country. And it's because of your modeling excellence in merchandising.
Dan's best line is that as a CEO, he has slept with more customers than anybody else in America. So
I wasn't going to say that.
But I love the line. And obviously, it's meant in a
I'm still married.
Positive way. He's still married, too. And a lovely wife, so.
You guys ready for some questions? Oh, by the way, Arthur Blank, Dan Cathy.
Rosemary, thank you for your taking leadership on, you know, today in America today, we need the strong kind of journalism that you bring forward.
Thank you.
So can't get enough of that. So, I mean, don't back up and don't give up. So.
Thank you. You know, the first question is about me. Will Rose Scott get season tickets to the Falcons? Wanya, did you write this?
Yeah.
That's not the first question.
Yeah. Let me take it as a reminder, though.
Got it. Actually, that question said, what advice would you give to small business owners and entrepreneurs who want to be a part of the West Side of this revitalization process? You know, you got the big names coming in, but what about the little mom and pops?
I would say the principles of the mom and pops are the same principles there are for larger businesses. There's so much that we can learn from others. As I mentioned, Arthur's been and Bernie Marcus have been tremendous role models for me. I talk about them regularly. I have the opportunity of being able to meet Sam Walton of Walmart. I mentioned already this morning Roberto Godesueta. There's something that we can learn from everyone. To have mentors, it's not enough just to have the dream or the ambition, but as business people, we got to have the skills that it takes to do it. It's not just the tech, Georgia Tech incubator that we've got over here that's tremendously successful. So excited at what we're doing there. But you've got to have some real business skills in the area of finance, marketing, management, business law, on and on. So make sure you get the education that you need. Many people are willing to help with that.
I think my answer would be that, you know, obviously there's a Walmart here. There's going to be a new Chick-fil-A here. There's going to be other big businesses that'll move here, which is great. However, all of those larger retailers, if you will, are going to offer more activity, more growth, et cetera, which is wonderful, but they're going to be voids in the marketplace. So my first recommendation to a small business owner is find out what need is being felt in the community that's not being served. And that's the one that you want to fill. And you fill that successfully, you're going to be successful. So again, it's a matter of, you know, being able to listen to people in the community and see what, you know, what they're looking for that they're not finding in these great retailers or great restaurants or whatever it may be, and fill that particular need. And I think that, in my view, particularly in a community like this, I think local ownership and being a local entrepreneur is going to be very powerful. I think folks living in these communities ought to look for ways to help support small business owners in any way that makes sense. So I would encourage them.
This next question actually falls in line with that, because it's how can the rest of the business community, and I'm thinking it's probably outside of the West End, how can the entire region of Atlanta be involved? What can people do? What would you like to see people do?
Well, I think it's, you know, Dan and I talked about this before. He and I were chatting one day. We had a meeting about something else and talking about, you know, how do you, it's great to come to meetings and to represent your companies and your values and your foundations, et cetera. It's quite something else to actually put some meat back on the bone. And Dan is doing that now with opening up one of his large restaurants here. And so I think you have to be prepared to, to make a difference, not just walk the talk, but talk, but actually walk the talk and not just talk the talk. And so I think we've done that in a whole variety of ways in the area, and Dan has as well. And I think, so organizations, I think beyond joining the Westside Future Fund and other organizations, being support and writing checks, have to figure out ways that, how do I physically get involved? How do I, you know, represent, you know, ourselves in that community's companies, like Rick Smith's Equifax, opening up a credit center here, YMCA building their national headquarters here. There's a variety of wonderful things that these organizations are doing to not just talk about what the needs are and to provide resources, but actually driving stakes in the ground. We need more physical stakes in the ground that show people that, you know, process and change is taking place.
Yeah. What do you think? The rest of the region getting
involved? It's going to take a lot of resources from all over Atlanta and even outside Atlanta, perhaps. No resources that we can channel into this market, into this community, and we can parse it out to organizations that are in need. I'd encourage the business people to be philanthropists and support the many social organizations and other ministries that we have here. They need those resources and it need to grow. I think we can prime the pump. It'll take that kind of economic input to prime the pump, but the goal would be that it would be sustainable, of course. It'll be able to run on its own merit, but it will take a lot of initial priming to get the re-crank back up the economic cycle and get it back healthy again.
I think that's critical.
Okay.
However, I do think you have to physically be here to understand that. Mm-hmm. So in the case of our Family Foundation, we have an office, you know, right down in these areas, and Frank and staff spend probably 80% of his time here. Mm-hmm. Because you got to be where the action is. You can't just write a check from a distance, send it in, and hope to get connected. You got to be physically connected and spiritually connected to understand really what's going on there.
Now, nobody sitting up here is a millennial, but this next question deals with millennials and being able to engage them. Do y'all have advice for millennials in terms of being able to understand the importance of being part of the community? Because millennials tend to move around. No offense, millennials, but y'all look.
It's a
One day they're over here, and next day they're over here. Yeah. And
so my suggestion would be open up a tab and serve craft beer. So we have, it's kind of a joke, but really not a joke. So you want to be in touch with the community. You know, we've been fortunate enough at our Atlanta United soccer matches, which you're temporarily playing at Bobby Dotto at Georgia Tech, great facility. All of our matches have been sold out, first time in the history of Major League Soccer for 22 years, et cetera. But the point I'm making is that, you know, those fans, there's only less than 3% crossover between a Falcon fan and a soccer fan. The soccer fans are young, they're diversified, they eat different foods, and they drink different beer. 85% of the beer, based on research that they drink, are craft beers. So if I was like a local, you know, if you came to me and said, you know, somebody was operating, I wanted to open up some version of a little pub or a tavern, serve food, and I'd make sure you have a lot of craft beers. And because, I mean, if you want to respond to the marketplace, that's probably not something that a company like Walmart would do, or some other liquor store might do. But if you want to attract that different, diverse group into your community, you got to understand what their needs are. So in our stadium, we're going to serve all those craft beers amongst hamburgers, hot dogs, pretzels, popcorn, all at fan-friendly prices, and Chick-fil-A products at fan-friendly prices. So you'll be able to get all the Chick-fil-A products, not on Sunday, but Monday through Saturday, when you're there, at the same prices that you'll pay Chick-fil-A when you go to one of their restaurants, which is a wonderful thing. So.
I would mention, Rose, that we've had a lot of engagement of millennials who want to live a purposeful life. We've had a lot of engagement from Morehouse College, from Spelman, Clark Atlanta, Theological Institution, Morehouse School of Medicine. They've all been, Morris Brand, they've all been very engaged here and usually are pretty vocal in some of the Q&A that we have here as well.
That was actually my next question about making sure the HBCU community is a part of all that. Our last question here, and you know, I love y'all. Can the students of the Atlanta Music Project Choir sing the national anthem at the first Atlanta United game at Mercedes-Benz?
That's a great idea.
Where's Dante? Dante, put that question in here. Yeah.
Who put that question?
Who's the...
I'm sorry, hiding in the back.
Where in the back?
Yeah, that's
there he
Dante
is.
Right there.
Okay.
Can you come see Penny McPhee before we leave, please?
Yeah.
And give us the information?
Yeah.
Got to work that out. Thank you.
I do think that music and the heritage of music in this community is something that could be a tremendous gateway, a portal to a meaningful life and education and aspirations. I know myself as a musician what it's done for me. And so, Dante, we appreciate your leadership. I was just with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra this past week, who also are going to be engaging, and we're helping them financially be able to have designated roles for the Alliance Theater, as well as the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, to be engaged in youth music education, arts appreciation programs.
And I'm going to take the last question,
right.
Moderator privilege, and that is more of a statement, I guess, than a question. It's also making sure that our aging community is not left out, and also health and wellness is so important. Y'all have a nice, healthy menu at Chick-fil-A, but health and wellness of a community is important, too, and you mentioned the Morehouse School of Medicine. Would you all like to see more health and wellness initiatives coming from the Westside Future Fund if you don't have enough already?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely would say yes to that. And I would say, you know, a good place for that is the HD backyard that I mentioned, where we can, you know, pretty much do whatever the community wants and respond to that. So I think, you know, often it's not a question even of having fresh organic vegetables and foods, but lots of times folks who haven't used to cooking with them don't know how to cook them properly. And so part of that is having
you
available...
You can't tell people how to make their greens, are
no,
they?
I personally can't, you're
okay,
right.
You know, how to
prepare them properly,
sure,
et cetera, is very important as well. And they found that in a lot of these food institutions that have been established all over the country that, you know, the fresh food's available, but not exactly sure, you know, how do we use it and how's the best way to cook it, et cetera, outside of greens. I think there's a whole variety of things that we need to do in that regard, because childhood obesity, mm-hmm, particularly in a diverse community, is a real issue. And that affects a lot of things beyond health. It affects self-confidence, self-awareness, you know, people being able to be as productive and as feel as good about themselves as they should feel.
And having access to healthy foods is so important.
It's critical.
Brothers, as the cows say, we all need to move a whole lot more. So we got the Beltline opening up, and that'll be coming up down through here. If you see the kind of activity that goes on in the Beltline up in the Ponce Market area, it's amazing how much physical activity that goes on there. But we got to have safe places. We got to have green spaces that are here. We got to have parks. Proctor Creek's going to be redeveloped. It's going to be very, very exciting. We got the Rodney Cook Park that's about to open up as well. So we're trying to make this the redevelopment to be balanced so that we can have the recreational opportunities that's so important to a healthy society.
You want your profits to rise a little bit? You put some collard greens on that Chick-fil-A menu?
Collard greens, all right. When we open up, we're going to be right across from the Busy Bee. And I don't
know. Wait, whoa. Now you
yeah. Yeah. So I don't want to compete. That's an institution. And I don't want to try to compete with their collard greens over there. So.
Good luck with that. Arthur Blank, Dan Cathy, thank you so much for taking the time.
You,
thank you all.